Today on Talk About That, John discovers deepfake video technology and refuses to sleep in. Meanwhile, I issue a correction from an old episode and still have night terrors, but can't get out of them thanks to modern medicine. Also, a conversation about humility, know-it-alls, and strawman arguments. Today's episode is not sponsored by A1 Vacuum Repair. Our products really suck, and we work with dirtbags. Let's do it.
It's your favorite part of Monday. We're hoping. Let's talk about that. I'm John, here with Johnny.
Hey, guys.
We are cranking up Banter Town.
You're looking like a... You're looking a little... I mean, I feel haggard today. I've got the allergies. Spring, man, in Tennessee is not the best.
No.
It's just we're caffeinated and pollinated and...
Do you think our listeners from other states, like, do they complain about the regional seasonal allergy issues?
I do a bit about allergies. I do the whole thing about Allegra. I do like a jingle from Allegra. And then I follow that up by saying, are allergies, I don't even know, are allergies bad here? Do y'all get that joke? And everywhere I'm at, they always go, they're so bad. No one has like, no, allergies are true.
No, we love our allergies.
It's fantastic.
Here. Yeah.
I mean, what is an allergy?
Like Arizona.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of allergies there, right?
No, it's terrible. Here's how, because I asked that too. I thought, well, Arizona, it's the desert. But evidently what happens is the desert plants all bloom one part of the season, and then everybody just...
Isn't that a country song?
Just, yeah. Desert flower, blooming like a desert flower.
Oh, my goodness.
Like a blooming onion.
Ugh.
Anyway, but I feel stuff that... You look like one of the wet bandits today. You got your... You got your toboggan or beanie, guys, whatever you want to call it. I used to call it a toboggan. Now it's beanie, right?
To quote...
Your skull cap.
Yeah, this is. I think this technically is a skull cap, actually.
It's pulled down, though. It's like I can't see what's going on.
Guys, to quote a very famous movie, Shrek, I'm a donkey on the edge.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like and if then we're in the same...
You quote Shrek a lot in your house?
Oh, I do. I do.
I've never heard anyone quote, I'm a donkey on the edge.
Really?
You're the first person ever to pull that quote.
Yeah, it's like,
you know, it's like
like Shakespeare.
It's like Senator Kennedy used to say, I'm a donkey on the edge. Like, it's not a...
You know, and this is how I might wear this skull cap in the middle of summer up here.
Really?
Yeah. Like, the other day in a staff meeting, I covered up in a blanket, like wrapped it around me.
Rock.
I do rock a little bit.
Do you think it's related to anxiety and not just...
Oh, Johnny, there's
it's
no,
like you're trying to get comfort.
There's no telling what all
have you tried the
to.
Weighted blanket where you're just trapped under heavy
things? We got
things?
A weighted blanket one time.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't a fan.
And Sadie's still under it. We can't. We don't know where she is.
Not a big... I don't know. I didn't get into the weighted blanket thing.
There's something to it because I made fun of it one time in a meme. And I was like, yeah, there's nothing better for anxiety than being trapped under something heavy or whatever. And people got in the comments and just were like so offended. Actually, my daughter, you know, people like with autism and stuff, evidently
sure.
It's a big deal.
It's a super helpful
And then
thing.
Even I know for like dogs, there's a thing called a thunder jacket or a, it's something that you put on dogs if it's storming.
Yeah.
And it's a weighted covering, like a harness, but it's weighted. And it makes them feel a little bit more at ease.
Huh.
It wouldn't my dogs.
You don't think
be like,
so.
Get this off of me. And it's storming. You've ruined my life. Whatever. Yeah. But anyway, I apologize. I'm a little sniffly today.
Yeah.
And I apologize for John's appearance.
I can't control this. I mean, I can control what I wear.
Yeah.
But I can't control the way. I could eat better.
No.
And exercise, take care of myself.
We had IHOP today.
I could control a lot more, I guess.
I don't normally eat breakfast. You know that.
I noticed this morning that at IHOP, you ordered a huge waffle.
Well, it's the size waffle that they have. I don't
literally
know.
Literally International House of Pancakes, and you ordered a waffle.
They have good waffles, though.
What a rebel, though.
I go to Waffle House, order pancakes.
Do they have them?
No.
Okay. Interesting that our waitress had worked at both places.
Okay.
Did you hear her say that? She's talking about...
Oh, that's right. She was talking about tips and how tips should not be taxed.
Yeah, how they worked
she
at Waffle House
She wanted to be tipped
House
under the table.
Here. Yeah.
Everybody, what is your feeling on that?
I have no comment.
I think you should render unto Caesar, lady. I opened the Bible. I immediately started witnessing to her. I was like, it's time for you to learn. Hey, whose face is on this coin? She was like, I don't know. I was like, well, I don't either. I don't have coins.
Yeah, what if we use that today? Like, whose face is on this coin? They're like, George Washington?
Yeah,
you have a penny.
The modern parable would
be
like, the modern would be like Jesus holds up a Bitcoin. Whose face, you know? whose face is on this Bitcoin?
No one's.
Lord Zorg? Like in whatever our robot overlords are at that point.
I'd like to state, by the way, I know that it's not George Washington on a penny. That would be
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah. Bitcoin.
Which is what you tipped the lady. You're like, hey, here you go. Well, something for your trouble.
Ding.
Mean Joe Green.
You know, I actually tip really well.
Okay.
Like and I think it's time that someone noticed it.
Right. It's like, what's the point if you can't get credit like on your own podcast?
We talk about this all the time. It was one of our inside jokes you may hear us say is anytime we acknowledge something that we did that was good,
yeah,
we always reference Jesus' statement about that if you let someone know that you were giving, that you've already had your reward.
This
you know?
Is your reward. Yeah, you've had your reward.
So now it's like every time it's like, hey, I should be noticed for this. And it's like, well, now I've had my reward. Like, when can you ever acknowledge you've ever done anything right?
When I do, this is true, when I do volunteer appreciation events for churches, and I do probably 20 a year. So these churches will do like, you know, we have a ton of volunteers here that help keep things going.
Right.
They run children's church. They run nursery care. They're not paid staff. Sometimes they will serve in one service and then go to another service if you have two services. And so tons of churches do that model. And so once a year they throw a big party. They appreciate all the people. And they bring me in to do comedy. Sometimes they'll even do awards. They'll have like a big glass plaque, citizen of the year kind of a thing. And I always – sometimes I'll go on after that. And I'll be like, let's give a hand to everybody who got an award today. And then, Stan, if you got one, you know, I'll make a big thing of it. And then I'll go, just so you know, there will be no reward in heaven now because – I mean, I didn't write the book. I didn't make the rules.
I hope you're happy.
It's just such a funny, awkward moment. And I love it so much. And it's probably why I've not been invited back to those places. But it makes me laugh.
Yeah, Pastor Roy always says, like, could we not wear the crowns for just a minute?
Right.
Before we cast them down?
Right.
Like, can I just see if it fits, how it feels? Mm-hmm. You know, I do think that whole, like, I think the rewards thing is such an interesting takedown in Christian culture. It's a real like, aha! Like, it's one of these, how dare you want something that Jesus talks about you're going to get.
Yeah.
And it's always this, like there's a guy, I don't want to say who it is that I follow, who I think is great. And he really talks a lot about...
Like, but you don't want to give him credit.
No, because what I'm going to say may sound critical.
Oh.
So eventually... Like, I love what he says, mm-hmm. and he really deals with, like, hey, look, there's no place on the political right or the political left where you as a believer should find your full voice or find your full satisfaction. Mm-hmm. If you find it, that's a problem because, like, the gospel – it's like we talked about in that book, the Live No Lies. He talked about the five things that Christians historically were known for. Two of them would be considered very liberal issues today. Two of them would be considered very conservative issues today. And so like there's this middle ground of you shouldn't find home.
Yeah.
Your ideological, emotional home in one of those places. It probably means you've gone too far. But my issue with him is like, so then a lot of what he does is calling it out. So like I get the feeling every time I read his tweets, it's like, you thought you could relax, but no. Like, it's a real, like, you thought you did something good, but did you think about this? And I just think sometimes that's why a good theology of I don't have any good works to stand on is so important. But that also means that my good works can now be accepted for what they are.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like my
it's still good that you did something good.
Yeah, and that's good.
I mean, it's not something to stand on, but it's something like it's better than not doing the – It's like Dwight Moody used to say about evangelizing people or not. He would say, I like my way of doing it better than your way of not doing it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like if you're just using this idea of like, well, it doesn't matter anyway, to just not do anything, that's not a Christian ethic either.
No, and that's sort of the accusation against the Reform side of things. When I know a lot of Reform friends, and that's not generally what any of them think. But when we were from an Arminian, which is a – you have a lot of choices, you know, it's all about your free will sort of mindset.
Right.
The whole idea of the other side is that they just think because of God's sovereignty, you don't have to tell anyone about Jesus or do anything because it's all going to be what it is. It's already predetermined, it's predestined, it's going to be what it is. And what's the point of even going out? Like that's the flip side of sort of evangelical mindset. It's up to us, you know, and then the sovereign folks who really dwell on the sovereignty are like, well, God's already predetermined and we can rest in this. And so, yeah, but then you're not going to do anything. And like, there's some sort of balance in between the two, that I think is a healthy spot. But like, one of my friends who's a counselor of the day was like, you know, he was kind of, you know, encouraging me. He was like, you know, Hebrews, it talks about that God won't forget your faithfulness and your good, you know, basically the good things you've done for him.
Yeah.
And I was like, you realize that scripture means nothing to me. Like, I can't let that scripture in because I'm so afraid of falling back into a place. And I don't think I've ever had confidence because I did the right thing. So even when I was trying before,
right,
I even
you're
knew.
Questioning your own motives, even if you're doing the right,
right.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's part of the being Enneagram 6 is it's really hard for you to see any of the positives in your life that you accomplished. Like, when you look back, you just accomplished something great. You rarely can see it. You
see the negatives.
You see the negative, what you
ripple
did.
Ripple effect of the negatives.
Right.
Yeah.
And so,
the possible way it could go negative.
Right.
That's what I do. I'll be like, well, this is great now, but will it last?
Oh, yeah. That's a real six thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do keep wondering, which we're going to send you the test, I think. I keep wondering, I think you're a six with a strong seven. I'm pretty certain you're a six with a strong.
I want to be something different just so that you're wrong about me. What does that make me?
An eight.
You can't pin me down.
Yeah.
I'm an enigma.
I'm super special.
I'm a riddle wrapped in bacon.
If you think you're like completely unique, then that's a very four thing.
Yeah,
a lot of artists have that. Like,
but anyway, you talk about scriptures kind of that are weaponized. Tim Hawkins used to have this joke about it. I've only heard him do it a few times, but he said, maybe it was just a tweet, but it was something about don't let your left hand know what the right hand is doing. It's great for giving and terrible for making a sheet cake.
Oh, that's great.
I'm like, what an absurd.
Yeah.
I always liked it when Tim would get absurd in his writing because so much of Tim's comedy is so brilliant, but it's very broad and it's very accessible to a huge audience, which is why he's a viral and successful comedian. That's part of the deal. But then when I was around him a lot, I would see this darker side of his personality come out, and he'd be like, what do you think of this? And I'd be like, it's so funny and there's no way you'll do it. And he wouldn't. Some of the times he wouldn't even try them. One time we were doing a tweet song, just one-liners, and one of his one-liners is still my favorite one. He said, live your life so that at your funeral, on your tombstone is written, I'm standing right behind you. It just doesn't make any sense, but it's so funny and dark.
That's great.
I don't know. I like that kind of stuff. Okay, so this is true. So speaking of like humility and legalism and mistakes, we have a correction.
Okay.
I got a note on my Instagram from, I guess, a fan of the show, at least a listener of the show.
Wow.
And so we were talking about the NCAA and paying players and name, image, likeness.
Uh-huh.
And we said that we were on the fence. I can't remember our exact position, but it was basically, look, the NCAA has been monetizing these students forever. And what if you're a student like Christian Laettner, who you're this huge, phenomenal athlete, then you go to the pros and you have this mediocre career. You didn't make hay when the sun shined or whatever.
Yeah.
And then blah, blah, blah. And so I used him as our big, like, this is my, you know, open and shut case.
And this was Christian Laettner who reached out.
No. Okay. Yeah. Christian Laettner said he's over it. He's like, whoa, I'm very successful. No, this guy reached out and said, Christian Laettner's probably not the best example. I can't remember how he put it, but it was basically like, Christian Laettner made $65 million in his pro career. And I didn't know that.
That's
evidently, he played 12 years. I didn't know that either. I think I thought he played like 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he made a good living. So
it worked out.
It worked out, but I still think that the point stands. Maybe we could use a different athlete. You know, you could use any number of other people. Greg Oden, who was a college phenom and like was riddled with injuries.
Yeah.
He started just breaking down immediately when he was drafted number one by Portland and never really saw the money that he could have seen. But if he was at Ohio, while he was at Ohio State, I mean, imagine what he could have made if they'd been able to monetize his name, image, likeness. So the point stands, but the example of Christian Laettner, he did have a very mediocre, like, as far as like stat wise, he was one time All-Star, though. I didn't know that. He made an All-Star team.
Wow.
I did not know that when he played with the Hawks. So he was a one time All-Star in like 93 and he, 94 maybe, but he averaged like, you know, 12 points for his career, 5 rebounds. It's not bad. I mean, I would take it. Would you take that?
Yeah, no, I would take it. I mean, I only averaged 11.
You take it right now in a rec league.
Right. If I could score 12 points once.
Yeah.
My question is, are you, I'm trying to figure out, because you keep saying we on all
well,
this
I'm saying
stuff.
Like we,
first of all, listeners.
Yeah, that's true. I'm the one who, this was I'm Johnny, the one who gave Christian Leitner his example.
And it appears that Johnny's maybe a little defensive but about your correction, and I'm like,
here's the
I'm
thing.
Ready to take it.
Here's
I'm
what
like,
I'm saying,
okay,
though,
we,
is
we
when
it.
You don't correct me in the moment, you are co-opting my nonsense. That's how, it's like a marriage.
Johnny, what else will we talk about? I'd have to sit here and correct you the entire time.
Don't you find that? Don't you find that in your marriage though? Like, if you know, do you think that your wife co-signs? Like, if you're at a dinner table and you're with another couple, and then you start spinning a yarn, like if she doesn't go, she just, you know what I'm saying? She's just like, let's roll with it. Let's not that you're lying, but you know what I'm saying? It's like you, there's something about like not calling out your spouse in front of other people.
I learned about probably year five.
Oh, it took 5 years. After.
Yeah, just like, you know.
When she threw me down the stairs, I was like, something's wrong with Buttercup.
Yeah, I think I'm like, you know what? I remember my whole life, I felt like I had to have instant resolution.
Yeah.
In all conversations. You know, I still struggle with that.
Right.
But I've learned that life is longer. And relationships are like there's
it's a highway. Really,
I guess I want to ride it, but there's like this. Give it time. It's okay. This won't be the only conversation we have. I don't have to correct everything because you end
true.
Up.
That's a good point.
Yeah, just like if
there is an urgency in our personality type to be like actually.
No, you're need to. Yeah, exactly. And it's like just let it ride a little bit.
I think that's part. I was talking with a new friend yesterday about that. About how like. One of my discoveries in my comedy career early on that really helped me was that it was important, really important to me to be seen as clever by the audience. And so I would underneath that would be the result. The net result would be I would not make myself the idiot in my jokes because it was very important for me to be the smart guy. Yeah. The other guy's the dumb guy in the joke.
Right.
And I was like, I figured it out. I was doing a podcast interview with somebody and they were like, so where did you go to college? And I was like, actually, I didn't go to college. And I started getting a little defensive about it. And I was like, oh, I really have a chip on my shoulder about not going to college. And so what it can do is make you overcompensate and become a know-it-all.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just as smart as anybody here and I'll prove it.
Yeah.
And you're like, now you're just a jerk. Like, so it's like you got to figure out a balance of like humility and being a learner, even though you weren't educated at a formal level, but like, don't be afraid to be like humbled.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
It's interesting. I was reading a book called Kill the Spider by Carlos Whitaker.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Carlos is great.
And he was talking about a lot of it's about his journey going to a program called Onsite. And it's like a week immersive sort of recovery type program. And he said it's funny how he sets it all up, but one of the first questions his sort of therapist, and it's all in group meetings, asked him was, when was the first time you can remember feeling like you were an imposter? You know, like that you didn't belong in it, like that you're at a table, everybody else belongs there.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks you belong there, but inside you know. And that's one of the...
A big one. Yeah, that's a great question. That's a good
Yeah.
That's a deep one.
He said he was like, oh, this, where is this? Because he was pastoring everyone when he first got there. Like, oh, I think God put me here to help all these people.
Uh-huh.
It was a real dad. And then that was like one of the first questions that like just punched him.
Yeah. You know, he was right now? Well, as soon as you asked that, I feel like an imposter.
Well, with my therapist, there's something about ages like 8 to 12.
Okay.
Where... they try to get you to think, what were you thinking at ages 8 to 12? There's a lot of emotional formation during that time. And
I still feel like a 12-year-old sometimes.
So, yeah, there's like something there's, inside
I can tap
of
into
you.
That. I can tap into that. I can tap into that carrying your tray in the lunchroom and looking around to see, like, who's going to let me sit with them. I can tap into that almost in any situation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have that not to get in too deep, but when you do IFS, which is internal family systems, you know, you begin to even name various internal parts as an exercise. It doesn't mean like multiple personalities or anything like that.
These are my kidneys. This is my, I go, sir, that's the wrong spot. No, this is what I call them. You don't get to tell me what my kidneys are. No, I know what you mean. So you name your like emotional.
Yeah, you name. And of course, if you overlay the Enneagram, which I'm super excited about that book that I've got to work on with the McCords, because that's what a lot of this is about. But you can even you're in their sort of premises that your internal parts have types.
Yeah.
There are various types related to your main type. So if you realize so if I'm a six, I have a five part inside who's very investigative. Uh-huh. And, you know, that part's can be activated, can be well aligned or misaligned. You begin to recognize which situations. And then, but IFS goes even further. Like, you can have a lot of different parts.
So what did Carlos end up doing with the between 8 to 12? They tap into that. And when did you feel like an imposter? What was the result of that?
Well, it just began. He began sharing his story.
Yeah.
I forget what exact story. He had a moment where he could remember.
That's a good one. That's like a good, like, anytime we have a podcast guest, it would be like a good.
When did you first feel like an imposter? I don't know if everyone feels like an imposter.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, that's part of what makes me feel like a super imposter is I have this held belief probably that there are people who just have it together out there. There's still like a mythological person who's like, well, yeah, but they don't deal with this stuff.
Right.
They've got a million followers online or they don't, whatever it is.
Yeah, that will be the next question is, what do you assume or what metric or what quantifiable or what personality trait do you see in that other person that causes you to assume
that's not an issue for them?
Like, because that would show you what you value.
Well, because I talk about it in my show about like if there's a through line in my hour now, it's like I was never cool. I think I'm going to call my dry bar that never was cool. And it's that idea that like you think there's cool kids who don't have insecurities. They're just the cool kids. And the older you get, especially if you see those people out now, you go, oh, that was the prom king. And look at him now.
Yeah.
You go, oh, he never was cool.
Right.
It was always, he was dealing too. Or I didn't know what his family situation was like at home. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a very freeing thing to start those layers come away. But yeah, there's still this, it's probably still a lingering thing that there's, but that person that was just whatever, that just had this TV appearance or just got this Netflix deal, they're not dealing in the same way that I am. And
see, I think I believe that they deal.
Yeah.
I just now would trade my dealing for theirs. That's now the new lie.
Right. I would trade my problems for theirs.
Right. Like, okay, they're dealing. They're still broken. I know we're all broken now, but man,
yeah,
I'd rather be broken struggling with their issues than my issues, which generally feel like scarcity to me. I'd rather be struggling in abundance than in scarcity.
Well, you know what it is? It's Christian Laettner. It's
isn't it though?
It is, because it's like I was like, this poor guy. Yeah. You know, he goes through college. They're taking advantage of this guy. He goes on, and he only made $65 million.
Well, this one of my favorite quotes is Margaret Atwood. She says, another belief of mine that everyone else my age is an adult, whereas I am merely in disguise.
Yeah. That's
like
a big one.
That one really hit straight home
think,
for me.
Here's the deal, though, and then this I just had this thought, but maybe that's why comedy is so needed and so cool is it reduces us all to that kid again.
Yeah.
You know, in a good way, because we all feel like, okay, everybody's a grown up at the table but me. But when you're laughing, it's like you're allowed to be that kid. And there's something like, you know, purifying and healing about it. Maybe that's what I'm really trying to tap into. It's like, hey, I'm a 12-year-old. Remember when you were 12 too? And then we all agree that it's the best. And then we all go home and we get to be adults again. We have to be adults again tomorrow. But tonight we're 12. Like, that's kind of maybe what's
cool. Well,
you're
cool going to sit at the lunch table, except I'm going to make a space for you.
Yeah, or I'm going to hold court at the lunch table.
Yeah, on all the people that, yeah.
That's the other part. That guy was a great clip I saw the other day from a comic named Zoltan out of San Diego. And he goes, I started therapy. He talks a lot about therapy in his new hour. But he said, I started therapy because I realized in my job, the way I prefer to interact with people is I need to be elevated and illuminated. And he goes, and I like for it to be frowned on for you to talk back to me. He was like, I need some help with
you
this.
You need to, yeah. That's great. Man, I don't, think we talked about the crisis of limitation, you know, last week, with that moment in life where you begin to kind of come to grips with the things we're talking about.
Yeah.
And the thing is, probably said it multiple times, but it really is just stepping on a scale. And stepping on a scale does nothing for you to change the results of that scale. So it, like, this awareness is, I think, again, my counselor friend says it, that, oh, what does he say? Information is not transformation. You know, like, there's no, like, you have to now grapple with what is going to change about this. And that's the scariest part. You get to a place where, I know where I've been struggling this week in particular, is I begin to feel great shame when my old issues continue to bring me down that I have already dealt with. Even though I'm aware they never go away and you're going to have good days and bad days, sometimes my bad days get extended into the next day because I'm now in regret. And for me, it gets into – this is where, again, my friends really try to help me because it gets into a real – I was not faithful to God. A faithful person who trusts in God would not have lost hope.
Right. You waste a whole other day being regretful about wasting the day before.
Right. And always
the stress.
And one of the things I always overlay myself into biblical characters, which I think is a good thing to do in many ways, but it's very subjective. Like,
I think it's interesting that it's always the major characters for you.
No. In this case, I'm the children of Israel. Like, I'm the whole thing.
The whole children of Israel.
Which I think is, those are the characters we're supposed to overlay ourselves. Because we're never Moses.
You're murmuring.
Yeah. We always make ourselves Moses or Abraham or Joseph or whatever. Yeah. But, like, really, you're probably the brothers and then the children of Israel. Yeah. Like, you're the ones no one's names can be remembered, and you're the ones who just grumbled in the desert, and, you know, that's more likely who I am. And then I'm just like, I'll never make the promised land, you know, because I couldn't, you know. It's a real – I mean, again, guys, I get it. I know there's a New Testament, and I understand that there's grace and all those things. I do think those principles – you know, I want to be a guy that comes up against the Red Sea and has Pharaoh – breathing down your neck, and you just thought, this is all about expectation for me. You thought after 400 years of slavery, you finally just left. You thought it's over.
Yeah.
That's what they were grumbling about, I think. It wasn't just like, wait a second, but it was a 10 plagues, 400 years of slavery, all these no's, and finally a yes. And when you leave, your captors load you down with gold and silver and say, just get out. You go from being a slave to a person covered in gold and silver. And you're finally leaving the place that you can't even remember anyone from your family who wasn't a slave because it's 400 years. Like, you can't even go back that far. And all of a sudden, within a day or whatever, someone's chasing you down to kill you and drag you or drag you back to Egypt.
Yeah.
And you're like, really, God? Like, I do. I get that sort of emotional exhaustion. And. Yeah. But so I don't want to be that guy. Like, I want to pass that test. And I don't know. I don't really know how, Johnny, or what the Red Sea equivalent is in our lives.
For some of us, it's the actual Red Sea. A big angry Pharaoh that wants to kill us.
I love that movie.
The actual Un Guapo.
Speaking of movies, I started sending you some really interesting.
Yeah, what is that, an app you have or something?
Whoa.
So, listen, I'm at dinner last night with my wife. And John and I text throughout the day. It's just something we do. We're dear friends. But your texts are normally like, hey, can you meet? Blah, blah, blah. Every now and again, it's a quote. We'll share some deep conversations. Sometimes it's silly stuff. But it's very rarely like five videos in a row that you've made on your phone. Like, you're not a playful person.
Whoa.
With your phone. Because you feel like it's a waste of time. So I was like, who has John's phone, first of all? Who has hijacked John's phone? Because I was like, John, I almost texted you back. You could have written a book with this time.
I love it how you're offended at my waste of time. Like, it's a
because I'm supposed to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm Ferris Bueller. You're Cameron. You know what I'm saying? You're stressed. You're like, I got to go over there. He's just going to keep calling me. I'll go. I'm the one like, let's go to the parade.
Yeah.
Let's waste this day.
Yeah.
So when you start sending me, like, these crafted videos, I guess it's a deep fake face video. You put your face on.
I'm not going to say the name of it because I don't want everyone else to start to use it.
Okay.
Like, I want to have the upper
proprietary
hand.
Driver technology.
But I'm telling you, you put your – it's not just that. You can take photos and have them – like, I took a photo of my daughter, and it has her mouth begin moving. Now, you can't add
It's terrifying what this could mean, though.
You can't add your own audio.
Because, you know, they said deepfakes will destroy the Republic, because basically what will happen is they'll convince you that Joe Biden has launched nuclear weapons, because here's a video of him doing it.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, oh, he's launched. And then they launch.
So you're telling me that...
I'm saying what you sent me last night will end the free world.
Because I chose to have fun for like 10 minutes.
Yep.
The one time in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and my wife even, she was like, you got to stop. Like, I was just giggling. I was like, I think
we were there. I go, here's another one. What's up with this guy?
It was very sophomoric. It was very like...
It was like you over James Bond. Was the first
one. I was like, I got a part in a movie. And it was the James Bond. I'm telling you guys, it puts your face in the James Bond trailer.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's you. It's crazy.
Well, you had hair.
Right. It puts hair on you or whatever. But
yeah.
Some of them, and then I did the Patrick Swayze. That one cracked me up. So Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Cracked me up.
But you were Jennifer Grey's character, which I thought, that's an interesting choice.
Why did he?
He's lifting you.
So I put Laura in the Jennifer Grey's character.
Yeah.
And I guess their faces, I don't know. Laura's face, she never looked that much different from the characters. And I put your face in Severals.
Oh.
I was trying to send one of you.
Oh.
But you never looked that different from the character.
Because I look like a movie star.
And I realized.
Is that what you're saying?
I think maybe.
You're like, I could put you over Ryan Gosling, but look.
Look, you already
look
like
there.
I was shocked. I was like, I think my face is misshapen to the level.
Oh.
Among all of my friends and family.
Interesting.
That perhaps it is more striking. Because you put me as Captain Jack Sparrow. I look like John Driver dressed up like Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, that one was the most. That one looked like you the
most. It looked like me.
Yeah.
And then if you put. But so I don't know. I think this is the one time that my misshapen sort of non.
How many more did you. How long did you play with that app that you did not send me the videos?
45 minutes, maybe.
That's remarkable. I think this is like a huge step forward for you.
It was.
I need you to waste more. What I need you to do tomorrow is sleep to 11.
I will say.
Would you, if you slept to 11, what would you feel about yourself? Would you immediately be like, I've ruined my day?
Yes. Is it a Saturday?
No.
Okay. No.
It's a Wednesday.
Uh-uh.
You'd feel like the day's ruined.
Was my wife up at 6?
No, she's out of town. She doesn't. She'll never know.
Okay. This changes a little bit. See, because and it's not because she checks up on me. It's because we're a partnership.
Yeah.
So the loyalist in me is like, hey, I can't. Yeah. I got to do my part because she works so hard.
What is your part before 11, though?
Well, we have a child.
I know that, but I mean, the Sadie's taken care of.
Nah, see, that means Laura had to do it.
She's out of town. Sadie's with her. I need you.
I couldn't do it. My body wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's true. I'll wake up at 9 anyway. Yeah, at the latest.
My body would
8:39.
Say
8:39.
It would be like.
I take, but I'd sleep through the night now. I take melatonin.
Yeah.
And do you take melatonin?
Sometimes.
So does it give you vivid dreams? Does it mess with your...
I have vivid dreams anyway.
Well, night. I used to have night terrors.
Right.
And people know this about me if you listen to the show at all or you know anything about my show. I have night terrors at least once or twice a week. And I used to just wake up, there's bugs on me, there's someone in the room,
right.
And I'd have to turn on the lights, make sure it wasn't real.
Right.
Or I would just be terrified and the Curry would have to be like, it's not real. Well, now my dreams are so vivid and weird. But the melatonin gives me, like, sleep paralysis. So I'm in the dream.
But you can't do anything
about
it.
But I can't do anything about it. It's not, like, terrifying. It's just, like, it's almost like the person is standing at the foot of the bed, but it's like apathy just washes over me, like, well, what are you going to do?
This is how it ends.
I had a good run. Like, you just, I don't know what you think. But it's, I don't know if that's better or worse, but.
That sounds better.
I guess.
I mean, if you're going to die, don't you want to just.
I mean, they're weird dreams, though.
You want to feel okay at the end.
Yeah, man. I was getting shot at the other night in my dream. But I didn't like jump up and be like, they're on me. You know, it was like, I'm probably doing this. I'm probably ducking and weaving in my.
I have a lot of those adventure type dreams.
I only take 10 milligrams. Some people take like 20.
Yeah.
And then my brother takes 2 milligrams and it knocks him out.
Really?
I think when I first started taking 10, he looked at me, he goes, dear, like, and it's over the counter at Walgreens. Yeah. He looks at me like I was getting ready to drop acid.
Like, my wife is laughing right now.
But now I think my brother takes 10, because I think now he's worked his way up. He's like, well, I've tried.
Like, 10 doesn't touch my wife.
Really?
She has
what
like.
What does she take? She's like 40? She's 40, 50?
I don't know how much, but, like, my wife has she just metabolizes medicine at a much different rate than the average person.
Okay.
So when she was under anesthesia in brain surgery, she woke up.
Oh, no.
Because she's a nurse, so she was listening in her subconscious. She woke up and tried to help. They were like, okay, hand me the – she was like, I'll get it. Like, she woke up. They're like, oh, my gosh. And, like, they had to put her back under quickly. I mean, it was not an open head.
It'd be great if she did know what to do. Like, and she knew what to do.
Well, she did. She reached up and, yeah, fixed the artery.
She fixed her own AVM.
But, no, it was like, that's a – so, yeah, you can't – like, handing her – She laughs at that. Like, it's people who take melatonin. It's like, oh, my gosh. Like, doesn't touch it.
So she doesn't even take it, or she just takes a lot?
If she took it, she wouldn't take a over the prescribed
or
dose.
Or she do Ambien or something?
Well, I'm not really.
What drugs are your wife on?
Dude, there's HIPAA. We have a lot of HIPAA regulations
this
on
is,
talk about
this
that.
Is like, would melatonin be covered under HIPAA? I don't even know.
I'm sure.
I'm not sure vitamins even work. I'm one of those people, like – Mark Maron used to say that, who's an agnostic on his podcast. He says, like, I don't believe in God, but I take vitamins, and I don't know that they're doing anything for me, but I still take them. Like, it's a kind of thing of, like, so I have faith in something, you know? It's like, we spend a lot of money on vitamins in my house. My wife orders, like, through the mail, through Amazon, a certain kind of vitamins, and I take vitamins every day. I don't know. I'm afraid to stop taking them now. I'm like, what if it really is helping?
I did it for a long time, and I was taking too many.
Okay.
Like, I was taking too many. But
the melatonin's definitely helped. The melatonin is doing its job. It's just also making me have, like, crazy technicolor daymares and nightmares.
Well, there's that.
Not daymares. I guess I'm awake, so I wouldn't have, like, a during the show. But
my vitamins are just so funny. Like, it's like CoQ10 is, you know, the cellular... it's supposed to replenish cellular things that could be taken out by a statin or whatever. And you're like, you're not going to know if it works until it's too late.
Well, even like vitamin D, like everybody's low on vitamin D in our new culture because everybody works from home or they don't get enough sunlight. So it's like everybody's supposed to go get their vitamin D levels tested. They even said that it was related to like your case of COVID could have been exacerbated by a low vitamin D. Like it can get worse. And I'm not saying it's a cure-all, but it's just a thing. It's another factor. And one of the reasons probably the U.S. had a lot of really bad cases, we just have a lot of big skyscrapers that block out sun, and we're just like New York's a great example. Right. We're stacked on top of each other in New York. There's no sunlight that gets through. Terrible COVID cases. So anyway, all that said, that was one of the medical journals I read, one of the things they were posturing. And so I was like, okay, well, this is interesting. But then they said, well, if you're going to take vitamin D, make sure you get the K7 along with it. It needs to have K. I was like, what the heck is K7?
Yeah.
There's all these other things. Does it have MS? If you take a glucosamine for your knees, does it have MSM? You got to have MSM. You're like, I don't know what that is. Mainstream media, I don't believe in them.
I only listen to talk about that for all of my news.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they
CoQ10 is one of those things that they add. They added a thing like, well, this is the cellular damage that's done by the other thing you take.
Right. Exactly. That's what it is. Yeah. And you just – at some point you go
– yeah.
This is where the whole misinformation – the misinformation, okay, I don't want to sound like a guy just talking about misinformation because is there another topic that we're not all talking about?
Right.
But like, for example, and I'm just going to get on this for a second. Someone sent me a video the other day, and it was by a guy that I wrote about in my book.
Uh-huh.
And the title of the video was, Are All White People Racist?
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the video.
I never would have written the article.
I know, Johnny.
But you
did the video. He's interviewing. He's a white guy, very famous.
Yeah.
And he's interviewing a black guy, and the black guy agrees with everything he's saying because he starts off on this premise of, I just want to talk about this question, are all white people racists? And here's why it's a horrible question. Here's why. And everyone's just like freaking out.
Right.
And I'm going, and again, I wrote about this, so I'm probably a little extra sensitive. Especially the person who sent it to me, like, it's obvious you didn't read what I wrote. Since I literally dealt with this exact person in the book as an example. But what I can't understand is...
because they weren't sending you the video like, get a load of this, rube. They were like, John, look at this. This is great.
Yes, it was, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, does anyone care that in all of my studies or my colleagues' studies... professors, theologians, authors, pastors, people who are talking about what we've been talking about, not one of us have heard anyone actually ask the question or make the accusation that all white people are racist.
Yeah.
So
it's like a deflection. It's like a question just to deflect from the real question.
Right. That's not at all the question.
Yeah.
I never met one person who thought that.
Right.
Like maybe
believing in systemic racism is not the same thing as believing all white people are racist.
Perhaps there's someone on the far, 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 far left. I don't know. Yeah. I've not heard them say it. But like the entire debate over CRT and our educational system, which some of it I've read is super scary because it really is removing like any mention of racism in American history.
It's like such an overcorrection.
Yeah.
That now we really are going to whitewash.
Well, we're going to say you can't acknowledge that.
I read somewhere they're taking out math books. It's like, what kind of story problems have CRT? Like math books? That's apparently, Tennessee, by the way. That's one of our wonderful Tennessee.
The hot button terms are so hard now. You know, but I just go, guys, at least trace back and go, this entire, like, and here's what it does.
Well, that's what a straw man is. You say, are you saying? And they never said it.
And then you take down
the argument that they've never made.
Right.
I'd like to go ahead and take down this argument that all white people are racist. Well, no one said that. But even so, let me go ahead and show you why you're wrong. Right. Like, I never know.
And by doing that, then they don't access the things we're actually talking about.
Yeah.
And it's infuriating. And I'm, yeah. It's one of those. So back to it all. Does CoQ10 or does whatever, like, how do you know? And then as a sort
of, does it make you racist? I think it does.
It's I think it's right there. I watched it on YouTube. So,
yeah.
But I think what gets me is, though, it puts you into an ideological, emotional tribe. It gets somebody riled up because there's never any, like, neutral comments.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know what, I want to really think this through. You're giving me something to think about.
Yeah.
One of my favorite comments in our book have been people go, hey, I'm reading this, and it's causing me to have to think about a lot of things I haven't normally thought about.
Right. That's amazing.
And I'm dealing with it.
Well, nothing better than that.
But that's what you want. I don't want someone to go, you know what? Thanks for taking down the libs. You know,
right.
You know what? Thanks for taking down.
I was thinking it, and you said it, and thank you. You're like, oh, no, this is not great. This is not good.
Like, I don't ever want to become that, and that's a – we can. I've been that. One time
when I was doing my college group, one of the students texted me, thanks for what you said tonight. It was exactly what I wanted to hear, not what I needed to hear.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a gut punch.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, no. What I wanted to hear?
No, I didn't want you to. Well, and I think that's that, like, I have that theory that the gospel is offensive.
Yeah.
Just not for the reasons most of us are making it offensive.
Right. Some people's personalities are offensive, and they're blaming the gospel.
Well, so we all know the gospel should have some offense. Anything that causes you to examine the way you see the world, how you live in the world is going to cause you to have to decide if you're going to change something.
Yeah.
And change is what's offensive. Why are people offended by any conversations? Because they're saying you shouldn't think this way. You should think this way. You shouldn't act this way. You should act this way. You shouldn't speak this way. You should speak this way. And that's offensive. There's no idea that exists that's not offensive to someone because it's different than the way that they think or they see or they, you know, view the world. That's why it's this. In fact, the very idea of saying, no, it's not true. We can all just have our own truth. That's offensive to someone. So to act like if the idea is having an unoffensive, true to yourself viewpoint,
right?
There's no such thing. Like it doesn't exist.
Right. To say there's many truths is, yeah. If you say there's absolute truth, you're leaving out the people who say there's many ways to truth. And the people who say there's every way you feel is the truth. They're leaving out the people who say there's only one truth.
Right.
So they're still leaving out something.
Right.
They're still objecting to a very singular way of belief.
Right.
So somebody says, well, you can't say it. If you're saying there's only one way to God, then you're leaving out all the people who say there's many ways to God. Okay, well, you say there's many ways to God. What about my way that says there's only one way? No, your way's wrong.
Right.
Well, they have their own, they're objecting to your.
Truth
is exclusionary.
It has to be.
Yeah.
It is defined and not defined by. But it always – look, every – oh, this sounds cheesy, but it's true. Light always casts a shadow.
Yeah.
Like if anything exists upon which light is shining, there's going to be a shadow. So the shadow is not the equal and opposite of the light.
I think you just wrote the foreword to my new book.
Do you have a title?
I don't know.
I was waiting for
Daymares, the Johnny W. story. I don't know.
A cautionary tale. I mean, like you can't – I think this whole idea, like, lies are not the equal and opposite of truth, but they do exist because of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best lie is always 90% true. And then the bulk of the emphasis is going to be on the 10%.
Right. Yeah, didn't you say that Russia right now is saying that their ship got caught in a storm?
Yeah, their flagship was sunk by missiles.
Yeah, and they're like, ah, I guess you just tipped over or whatever. They're trying to sell that they're still this mighty military force because right. that's what they need to sell to their to keep people, the, you know, yeah. The strength up and the morale up. But they're like, yeah, yeah, they must have just got caught in a bad gale force winds.
Yeah, we were like, towing it and there was an
explosion. It's an ocean liner. It's a...
Right. And it had munitions on board that exploded randomly in the middle of a storm.
What are you going to do? I mean, because they can't give the victory to the Ukrainians or whoever the allies are.
And the truth is, the ship's sank. Like, they can't deny. So there's always truth.
Yeah.
In every single bit of
it. You can still try to spin it to make your case still, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what the scary part is. If somebody points out truth within an ideology or a viewpoint, it doesn't make it sound. It only makes that part of it sound.
Yeah.
Like, what is its real? That's why I think it's so key that you always evaluate a tree by its fruit. Like, what is its fruit? That's a kingdom perspective. What is this doing in you, and what is it doing in others? What fruit is it producing? So, and then Jesus identifies those fruits, or Paul identifies the fruits that Jesus lived out. You know, is this producing? This is a tough one. If you really look at the way you approach social media, the way you approach mainstream media, the way you approach your family, the way you approach your ideological stances and bents and approaches, are they producing in you love, joy, peace? Like, these are the specific ones that we just kind of go, look, kids, it's a flannel graph, fruits of the spirit. Like,
right.
I mean, really, these are pretty – this is a pretty pivotal, actual fulcrum upon which all the parts of how to live are found. That's a great quote, by the way, is everything – everything has been discovered except how to live. I think it's what it says. Let me find the exact quote.
Oh, that's great.
I've got it right here. This is so key to me, and I couldn't remember it.
it's a John, one of John's tenets of life, and he's going to misattribute it.
Everything has been figured out except how to live.
Yeah.
That's John Paul
Sartre.
Sartre.
I like that guy. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Everything has been figured out except how to live.
It's an old Chinese proverb that says, to have a great life, follow the advice you give other people.
I read somewhere the other day, they're like, no one really wants advice, they want corroboration.
Oh yeah, that's huge. Yeah. That's for sure the way we live now. Just back me up. Yeah.
But if it's not producing in me those, if it's not like kindness, so some of those fruits are inward and some of those fruits are outward. If my expression, and I think that was, you know, Reggie's taught me a lot about that. We're talking about a volatile topic. But I've not heard Reggie, even when people have been super mean to him, there's a kindness.
Yeah.
That's a fruit, man. That's a fruit that shows me there's something else being formed in him outside of this particular issue.
Right.
And so that's the filter we're supposed to use. I'm not sure it's the one that we do, Johnny. I know it's not the filter you're using.
No. But, I have no filter. You know that.
I think that.
I use the one that swaps my face for James Bond's face.
It was such a great app. Yeah. I'm probably going to send you some more later.
Please do.
I did one where I'm Forrest Gump and like the trailer. And like when I'm on the boat, and I'm smiling and laughing
because
I just saw – I don't think I'm doing the wave, but I have my arms behind me. Mm-hmm. And I just saw Lieutenant Dan on the dock or whatever, and I'm just grinning. Johnny, it looks like me as Forrest Gump. Like,
yeah,
it's
I can see it. Yeah, you've got a
– I got a real Forrest Gump kind of
vibe. Yeah, there's a dimness
vibe
to you. I couldn't put my finger on it until you said it, but
there's a dimness. That's great. Hey, a couple things I want to address today.
Oh.
As we kind of wrap this up.
Yeah.
One, as you know, I've been doing a book giveaway, and multiple listeners, numerous, have reached out and taken advantage of my book giveaway.
So many.
I will ship you a book for free.
Yeah.
If you'll agree to read it and leave an honest review on Amazon. And I had a listener reach out. I'm not going to say his last name, but his first name is Michael. And he was very complimentary of the podcast. And when I emailed him back, Michael, when I emailed you back to get your address, your mailbox is full.
What?
It's been being returned. Now, I've tried on multiple email addresses. Michael, can you please find a way, Facebook, otherwise?
Is everyone wasting airtime on this guy? He can't even empty his mailbox?
Just get me an address. I'd love to send you a
book. Pull it together.
I'm trying to help.
Hey, before you read John's book, why don't you read some of these emails and delete them? Here's a tip.
Let's talk about
Michael,
that.
Michael, listen,
hey, we're just kidding,
it's all in good fun. We're sure you're getting a lot of stuff done out there.
If you listened this long, Michael, and got to this part, we're already...
People always wanted to be roasted by Don Rickles. That was like a big honor, you know? So hopefully Michael sees it that way, too. And he's not like, I'll never listen again.
Yeah.
You take your book and stick it.
Had another really kind listener
this
week reach out. And she came to us through our friend Allison Holland's podcast, Kennedy Dynasty. Yes. If you guys haven't listened to Kennedy Dynasty,
what are you even doing with yourself?
It's all about the Kennedys, like not just JFK, not just the assassination or conspiracy theories. Like, it is a deep dive
Camelot.
Into the family, like, I mean, throughout history.
Yeah.
She has historians and teachers and others on there.
Rumor has it that I have been asked to be on that show.
Oh, well, that's a pretty big deal.
So upcoming, I don't know how far out she is. She's not like us. She records like 5 weeks out probably.
A couple weeks. I think you're
so if I go on it next week, then it should be a couple
just depends.
Weeks.
Yeah.
So be looking for that.
That'll
she be
does. I will say she does a lot of high profile interviews.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about the role of satire and humor as it relates to like the presidency and mm-hmm. when that started, and as related to the Kennedys and tragedy and gallows humor. And yeah. I have a couple of topic ideas that I think I'm gonna do some research. Allison's like so researched compared to us. That I feel a little bit like I need to do my homework on this.
Listen, I did a lot of interviews.
I don't just show up and be like, I don't know, I'm smart enough to do that. I'm not. My imposter syndrome will kick in for sure.
No, I have to research some when I go on her podcast. But yeah. I will say this. I told her the other day, I did a lot of kind of high-profile interviews around the book.
Yeah.
I think my interview on Kennedy Dynasty about Not So Black and White has to be number one. Like, it was my favorite interview I did.
Wow.
She just brings out
go
a lot
find
of
it.
Stuff.
Go find it on her wherever fine yeah. podcasts are sold.
And it's on my Linktree. You can go on my Linktree too and find it. Yeah, but go subscribe to Kennedy Dynasty. Wow, not a sponsor, but look at this. We just told everyone to do it.
Linktree, so. Look at you. Hey, what fruit is on your Linktree? Oh, that's what
my
I want to know.
Guys, isn't it true?
What will I'm going to produce?
That's going to produce
podcasts and followers and stupid videos.
Speaking of followers, you should go follow Johnny on Instagram.
You should. Also, talk about that podcast.com where you have over 200 archived episodes. Binge it. Hey, well, you know we got that trip to Florida planned with your family?
Yeah.
It's a long trip. It's the highway to hell, basically.
Oh.
Just get on that road. Yeah. Start at episode whatever. I would start at episode, where would you start?
I'd work backwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can see the de-evolution of the show.
Yeah. You can see how we fell apart.
Yeah. Do you think we've gotten better, or you think we've – I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, we're gaining in listenership. So
that can only mean
– I don't know. You
things
know, it's
don't
hard.
Grow unless they're great. Everybody knows that.
That's such an evangelical thing to say. You know.
No, what you do is –
healthy
then,
things
And then
grow.
You can go against it too. Like if it starts getting bad, you go, we must be doing something right. The devil's attacking.
That's right. That's right.
We have lost all of our listeners, and that must mean
– we are in the world but not of it, so obviously the world does not like it.
Right, you can just spin it whatever you want. Listen, that ship just got caught in a bad storm.
It did. It did. It was just there were some munitions on board, and we don't know what happened.
Yeah, look, these things.
One of the guys gardening was smoking.
That's great.
Yeah.
And we hope that you're not smoking, dear listeners. It's bad for you.
It is bad.
But if you are, look, I understand. Everybody's got their vices. Like, I drink too many sodas.
Yeah.
But we're so glad to have you on board and our ship, even though we've been through some storms. We're still afloat. I'm trying to. This is, every metaphor has its reasonable breaking point.
Hey, if you would like a free book, I still have some left in the giveaway. So email me at john@johndriver.com.
You might get Michael's book because.
Yeah, Michael, if you don't reach out soon.
That book's
gone.
Going.
He's gone. john@johndriver.com.
Yeah.
That follow sounds us. Like a very pretentious email address.
Yeah. Well, mine's johnny@johnnyw, so what am I going to do?
Right. But you feel like I'll say it sometimes.
When I give it to people at the hotel, they go, what's your email like? When I say Johnny, they go,
really?
They look at you like, well, who are you that you have your own, you know, whatever domain?
Hey, you know what I purchased the other day, speaking of what? Domains? I purchased johncdriver.com. I haven't set it up yet. Wow. What am I at a whole like?
Just in case, because the Amish guy, right? The Mennonite guy.
Right. Because I'm my next book proposal I've made at John C. Driver, you know?
It's kind of interesting that he has a website.
He doesn't.
Oh.
That I can find. I own johndriver.com.
But he's just out there. He's got his own printing press.
I just want if people see.
It's like Gutenberg.
If for some reason I became more known for John C. Driver and someone typed that in, I want them to also find the real. Well, we're both the real John Driver. Wow.
That was close. You almost implied that there's only can only be one John Driver.
I think it'll look like the Highlander.
You've got whatever the opposite of imposter syndrome is, you have that.
Right. I am the John Driver.
Everyone else is an imposter. Well, there's a lot to dig into. We're going to continue this off air.
Guys, thank you for spending the time with us as always, and we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.